Heritage Development. The narrator is Genevieve Martinick, and the interviewer is
Sister Sally Witt and
Council Ellie Heaps.
Today's date is the 17th, 1981. I was born in Bridgeville, Pennsylvania, at Presley Road. I think it was 123. And I was born at home on April 7th, 1937.
Was that at home by choice or chance?
No, my mother had all of us at home. I lived there all my life, 25 years, until I entered the convent. My father lived there all his life, and he's still living in the same place. My mother was born in Sharpsburg, but she moved to Bridgeville when she was 5. And I didn't know that.
You said all of us. How many were there in the family?
Okay.
How many are there?
Okay. My mother's dead. My father is living. He's 78 years of age. I have a brother. Three brothers. Two brothers live right on Presley Road. One lives in old family home, and he's married and has 4 children. The other brother was married, and he had 4 children, and he's divorced. The other brother lives right back the road, and he's married and has 1 child. And then I have a sister who lives in Coriopolis, who is married and has 4 children.
What are some of the works that your brothers and your sister have done?
My brothers are all roofers. One brother is a bum. He does nothing. The other two brothers work for the same roofing company, and they have worked there since they were 18. Mm-hmm. My sister worked at Woodville State Hospital, and she now works at Ohio Valley Hospital.
Was roofing your father's trade?
No, my father worked at the Flannery Bolt Company in Bridgeville, and he worked there for 35 years, and then moved to Ohio. So then he didn't have a job for about 18 months, and I supported the family while he was out of work. And then he got a job at John Cain Hospital. But he really didn't get into the job until he actually got sick and experienced what it was to be sick. And then he became a very good orderly, attending to medicine. Then he worked there for 13 years until he retired.
How did you support the family?
I worked at the EMP Energy for 6 years. I supported him through his being off work and us when we had a cancer operation before he entered the that was about 20 years ago, and they said he wouldn't live the year, but he must have got it off.
What was Bridgeville like then?
Oh, it wasn't as developed as it is now. I mean, there was, on Presley Road, there was no houses, other than just a few houses on one side of the street, and now it's all built up. It's much improved, except since the shopping centers came into existence, the town part, which is just one main street, is really a lot of it's closed because of the shopping centers on right outside of Bridgeville.
How did you become acquainted with Sisters of St. Joseph?
Okay, we have 2 other sisters from Bridgeville, Beatrice Orient, who I really didn't know growing up, but her aunt is married to my uncle, and I heard of her, but I didn't know her. And then Do Hanley, sister in Francis, who is my neighbor, lived on the next street, and we're close in age. She was ahead of me in school, but I wasn't allowed to play with her, because my mother said she was bad. She played with the boys. She played with my brother Rich, who her brother and my brother Rich are the same age, and so she played with them. But I just knew her, you know, casually. The way I got to know them was my mother saw in the St. Agatha's Bulletin about a job at St. Bernard's, and she applied for it. It was a cooking job, and she got the job, and that's when I met Sister Ricarda, and Sister Mary Rosella, and Sister Mary Christie, and women of love, and Sisters Mary Timothy, but I was 24 years old. I had no idea that I wanted, you know, had a vocation. In fact, my family, especially my mother, had a very good prayer life in that, and I kind of picked up on that. But I prayed either to get married or to live single life, but I never prayed for a religious vocation. My sister Mary Ann wanted to be the nun, not me. And so then I went, when I met the sisters, they were so relaxed, so free, and so joyful. And I thought, maybe there's something to this, you know. And then I start feeling maybe there was something more in life for me. So then I came to Baden on retreat and fell in love in the chapel. And thought, when I walked in the chapel door, this is where I'm supposed to be. And so then I came in September of that year.
You work in the hospital, sister. How did you come by that? Did you want to do that type of work? Georgetown University Hospital.
Well, first I was here, and I worked in the kitchen, in the diet kitchen, and then I slipped in the refrigerators, and so I went to Georgetown to see the doctor. And after I got there, I really liked it. And so I went to the doctors and had therapy and all that. And then I said, I wrote Mother Mary Isabel if I could stay. And she said, well, if you want to stay in Georgetown, you have to have a job. So then Sister Ruth Bear and I talked, and she got me an appointment at Georgetown psychological testing. And I was tested there for 2 weeks and plus some counseling. And they came out through the testing that I was geared to nursing and social work. So then there was a job opening at the clinic. So I have no background in nursing, so I tried it. And I worked for a month, and I said to Sister Francesca, I need more knowledge. And so then I went into a 10-week nursing assistant program. And after that, I went back to the clinic for a 2.5-year period. And then I started to get restless again, feeling that I didn't have enough knowledge. And so then I asked to go on to the LPN program at the Suburban Hospital. And Isabel didn't know if I could do it or not. And Francesca says that she was sure I could do it. So I went and I made it through the school year. Well, I did well in the nursing tests and got my license, and then I started back at Georgetown working on orthopedic surgical floor. And I did that for a year, but all the time I wanted to go back to the nursery. And when as soon as the opening was in the nursery, that's where I went. And I worked with the sick baby, well baby, preemies, that type of transitional nursing. I did that for 8.5 years. And then Mark says to me, I think you need to come back to the community. And I said, no, I didn't want to come back to the community. I liked D.C. I had my friends there. I had my security there. And I fought it for at least 4 months. And I went through spiritual direction with a sister from the Holy Child of Jesus, who got me back praying and seeing maybe I should, you know, go back to my roots. And then I came here on Holywood retreat, and I had Kuffer for a director, and it was the first time that I felt really a part of this community, that I felt that I really wanted to be a sister of St. Joseph from Baden. Before I was just, you know, Sister Genevieve Martin McDowell at Georgetown. I really wasn't tied up with this. And it was like a real grace that I fell in love with the community again, as I did when I was back in 1962 when I entered. And so then I was more anxious to come back here and meet the sisters, because nobody knew me. Who are you, a novice? Are you thinking about entering? You know, all these things. And so then I came back in July and started here, and I thought, oh, this is going to be a snap to get a job in Pittsburgh. I have all this background and this good reference from Georgetown. And nothing happened. And I waited and I waited. So I helped Nancy with housekeeping, house cleaning, and that wasn't too bad. It was like going back to leadership, but it was good. And the warmth that I felt when I came back into this house and support and getting a routine in my prayer life, not a routine, but I mean setting aside a time that, you know, that I made sure that I did it. And if you don't do that, I think you just don't pray sometimes. And growing, meeting people, and just, I don't know. I feel like I haven't had a conversion experience. It's really great.
You say you feel like you have had.
Yes. And so all this waiting, I kept saying, what am I waiting? You know, why is the Lord doing this? Why is he making me wait? And finally, in August, while I worked with the Arlene and Pat Phillips in the Long Hills, September, finally, there was a breakthrough, Elegant and Jonathan. And it was ideal. It was a nursery center. And it was just, everything was, you know, it was great. So then I had to go for a physical. And the practitioner who saw me says, I'll have to let you, you'll have to see an orthopedic doctor. So I went to Dr. Doering, and he wouldn't pass me. He says, you have a sprained disc, you have arthritis in your spine and your knees, and you have to get out of nursing. And then the whole world's in that room. I was back down on square one. But I really didn't get depressed about it or anything like that. And I thought, well, the Lord has something else for me to do. What is it? But never believing when Anne Frances called me to her office on September 25th that she would say to me, would you want to, we're asked to take some Cambodians. She said it'll be about 20 people. It'll only be for about 10 days. Would you consider taking care of them? And I says, well, how am I going to talk to them? And she says, well, we'll take care of that. Just would you consider doing it? And I says, well, I'm a little afraid about it, but I'll try. And then it was kind of scary, you know, meeting these people and everything. What are they going to be like? And getting things ready and. And then I was going to my sister's to tell her about it. And on the way I was praying, you know, I'm really going to have some your support, Lord. You're really going to have to help me. And on the way there, the Cindy Prescott came to mind. And I had met her at Harvest Festival. And, you know, that she would be the ideal person. She was coming on Monday, but she doesn't have a job. Maybe she could help. So I came back here, and I was all excited. I asked Dan Francis, could Cindy help me? She says she would ask her, and she thought it was ideal. But I did not know Cindy is a caseworker, who's a social worker in her background. And it just, you know, that's really how the Lord's working. It's really great. So we got together, and then we got together with the coordinators and set up things. And our first... 31st, we had to go over again where it picked them up. There were five people, the Simpson family, and since then they have been relocated in Anchorage, and they're going to be able to be self-sufficient in January. That's our first family that went home for a second.
What are some of the tasks that you involve with them?
Now I know a lot more than I did then, because I didn't know to look for lice or scabies or their medical records, you know. That's like the first thing we do now, is check out those problems, because after we had 26 people here and found out that we had lice, and we had to do all those people's heads and wash all those clothes, and it was long hours, you know, come in. The rooms, we just got the rooms ready, and then we got clothes started coming in. When they came, you know, we just told them to take clothes, which they wouldn't take at first because they weren't used to having a lot of clothes. And I guess they didn't have the idea that this was going to be their home and that they would need more clothes, that they would need some winter clothes, that they just didn't need like before they knew, might only had two pair of pants or something like that. And now that, you know, they only had six pair of pants or eight pair of pants at the time, they just couldn't fathom the idea of having all those clothes. For the first, I don't know if it was the first week or first few days, we went through so much rice, because that's all they were eating was rice, the chicken broth and eggs. And now, after these couple of months, they eat everything. There's nothing that they don't eat.
Did you feel they trusted you from the very beginning?
They were very, you could see the fear in their face. You know, because they were coming from, they were very peaceful living people. They lived on farms mostly, and in small villages. And then when their government was overthrown, the food scarcity was the first thing. They were hungry. And then their government said, for 3 months they had all that they wanted, and then they took that all back and put the people to work, and they started killing the people. And it was a constant fear of you're going to be next. Or they'd say they're going to take you to such and such a place, and they were never seen again. And at first, when they met me, they were afraid. And you could see slowly this fear leaving. But it was through talking to them, hugging them, they spent a lot of time in my room and telling me all these experiences.
Someone told me they're free to go into your bedroom when I wish and talk to you.
Oh, yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm. My room is an open door.
How do you talk to
them? Oh,
that's your first question.
Well, they also had books in Cambodian and English, and we kind of did some of that. At the very first, that's what we did. We looked up the English word and pointed to it, and they can read. They all have some, maybe a year or two of education. Simcoe Sells anyone has probably a year of education. But the rest of them have all had at least a year or two. 4 years is a bit, I think, at the very most.
Sister, did they know each other? Were they friends before they came to us?
Sim Song and Simcoe Sell, they knew each other in advance. But they're from the same villages they were. They're not in Cambodia, they didn't know each other. In Thailand is where they met each other. And this last family, last night, simply saw me from Thailand. So that made things much easier.
Where did they come from? Directly from their homes, or from, you know, some kind of a camp of some sort?
you know, they, oh, from, to us, they came from Thailand. But it, 1979, most of them escaped from Cambodia, either by walking 4 to 5 days up over the mountains. One lady told me that they went through water, you know, little mom's mother, and she had him over her head, and they walked through deep water. Some of the stories are just so touching. And the more and more you get to know them and trust them, their English is much better. And some Cambodian words I understand too, so I can pick up what they're saying. And but they have eye contact. And they look, and if they trust you, they'll look right at you and talk to you. But when they meet some strangers or some of the sisters stop them, they have to say, "Dumb, I don't know you there." And I think it's because they're afraid. And they must forget what the English they know. But with me and Cindy, they would feel very free to tell me what's happening. And in Thailand, they moved around from camp to camp because of the camps. Some kids also said he didn't know why, but they would just say, "You know, you're born to such and such a camp." And so you didn't have a lot to carry around. You had a little bit of clothing. And he's hot there too, they don't need that much food. But he taught over there in the school. He either taught 3 hours in the morning or 3 hours out there. So he is a teacher.
They've been refugees then since 1975.
Yes. The other family we had were refugees since 1975. They were in 9 different camps. And they were the most fearful of precepts. They are in Swickley now, and their English is coming along well. And they're like a change for people. And they will. The other thing we do, we go visit them, and we also bring them back here. So there's communication, and it hasn't broken down. And it's like a big holiday, and we go see them, or when they come here. They practically kill you the way they hug you. Like when I took the boys up to high school, these 2 17-year-old twins, they walked in the door and they were holding my hand and they said, "You won't leave us." And I said, "No, I'll stay as long as you feel comfortable." And then I ran into Ben and he didn't know either to shake my hand or kiss me in front of all those people.
He was already a student? Okay.
Yes, he's already a student. But I think the twins can speak more English now. And then we set up programs. We asked for volunteers to teach. And Sister Sienna has been most generous, helping us in the dining room and there, and for a class every day. And Mary Baker and Geraldine and Bench. And then we got talking to Sharon, and then Sharon opened up to her teachers. And it's really not the teachers teaching the children how it's done, or the adults. It's the students teaching them. So they really learn more from the sisters, the older sisters. The older sisters give them more tutoring than, because, you know, students don't know how to teach. I mean, they were teaching them words for it. Sister Geraldine, they were teaching them sentences. And they also taught them about money. We did some reinforcement on that, and they've gone shopping, they've been to the circus, they've been ice skating, they've been over to their shops a lot of times. They know how to wash their clothes, and use their dishwasher. They take care of all that. I make a schedule every day for their classes. They have a schedule for cleaning.
Cleaning the area.
Right. They clean their rooms every day, but I mean like the hall and their TV room and their bathrooms, they do that every other day. Scrubbing and cleaning the sinks and toilets and the showers.
Did you have a problem, sister, with having to take showers?
Oh, well, this, at first, you know, they were taking showers in their clothes, and they wear these, the ladies and the men, some of the men were doing these wraparound things, and they would take the shower right in with them on.
They weren't his to show up?
No. Mm-hmm. They, Cinco Sal says to me that 50% of the refugees have lice or scabies or things like that because of lack of soap and lack of water. And now they shark, a lot of them shark 3 times a day. And they go through a lot of toothpaste, a lot of shampoo, and a lot of soap. It's better than that. And they have their favorite clothes that they wear lots of the time. But they do worship them. Mm-hmm. The shark was one thing. The other thing was the boys not knowing how to use the toilets. They were going in the showers, using the shower stalls as urinals. That was one thing. They had to learn. It's terrible watching television. They either don't have the sound up or they turn it down. And they never watch commercials. They switch. One time, Kenise and I were watching television with them, and he says, I thought we were watching Chip. Here's Darcy and Hatchell. But they're constantly, every time there's a commercial, and they go, and then they pick up another program. And they make, at first they made up their own stories. They didn't even have the sound. Did you hear that? About the one with twins when they learned the word friend. And he came up and put his arm around me and says, you're my fat friend. I told him, you could leave off the fat. And in the dining room, they just stuck to the food that was in the warmers. They would just take the rice and eggs and broth. And they wouldn't go down the line at all. Touch none of the vegetables or none of the jellies or cookies or fruit. And then slowly the sisters kept saying, have a piece of fruit, have a cookie. And now they take everything. The first time they had ice cream, it was so funny. They wouldn't, I kept saying, it's good in the arm. And Kenise gave a baby a little bit, well, the baby loved it. And then one of the little girls, and they decided should try it. And I don't think she expected it to be cold. And she went at it and she brought, the cone came up to her. She had it all over her face and she made such a terrible face. And she finally tasted good. And then Paul took some and then next thing you know, another teenage boy. Next thing you know, all of them. And now they have it. They know what day's ice cream is.
What figures have been raised, sister?
We have one Protestant family and one, the rest of them are all Buddhists.
Do they have any form of worship up there? They don't say prayers or anything?
No. They said that when they were in Cambodia, I guess for a long time they haven't been to their temple or their palace, whatever they call it. They used to do that certain holiday. They really enjoyed Thanksgiving. And they took part in it. And they really liked learning. They learned one bread, one body. And we put it on. We used newspaper, not print, newsprint, right? And we put it up with tape on the wall and we wrote it. And then we should underneath that we wrote it in Cambodian so they could get the connection. Mm-hmm. And then they learned. They did some for us in Cambodian. Now we're going to teach them something for Christmas too. And so far they've been, they're all going to be here for because so many times we said they're not going to be here. First they were supposed to be here 10 days. Mm-hmm. First we were going to have 20 people, and the next thing you know we had 26. The next thing we turned around we had 32, and now we're back up again. We've done 28. Yes, and then today there's going to be 3 more coming, so that's going to make it 39.
There's been a lot of things that have been so touching, you know, like the sister's generosity has been really the experience with the newspaper people, and then the response from the people, you know, calling me and saying, can I do something, sending donations, sending flowers, which I'm, you know,
I can keep their clothes.
But I mean, we've got lots.